What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It's a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and more importantly, on your life. Listen and follow Jill on Money on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to another round of SDHEM, the best of soccer down here's Network Morning Show. John Nelson here with you to take you through it as you're listening to us on the Off the Woodwork podcast section here at 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Every Monday through Friday from 9:05, since we are Turner Time kids, and that's how we kind of grew up with things happening at 5 minutes past the hour, 9:05 until 11:05, and then most times a lot longer than just the straight 2 hours. Monday through Friday, we let you know what's going on, get you started for your day in the world of soccer. It is the SDH Network. It is myself, Jason Longshore, Madison Cruz, Jared Smith, Nick Alifi. All of us, we all drift in and out, and we have our list of folks that we like to bring in occasionally to be the reference points and the experts in certain parts of the planet, but then we also go through all the news of the morning and bring in experts to let you know what's going on when it comes to the news of the day, and we take you through it all week long, all year long, frankly, so it's 2 hours a day, 52 weeks a year, you know, probably something along the lines of 300 hours live of programming by the end of a calendar year. But this particular week, it has been a very, very busy week when it comes to Atlanta United getting ready for Seattle Sounders. We have a couple of different folks to let you know what they think about the seasons of both of these clubs. And then we're going to wrap up with a really cool story that's tied to Atlanta United and a massive tournament coming up at the early part of the week. Our first interview lays it all out for you. He is going to be on the call on Apple TV and MLS Season Pass. It is a play-by-play voice who has had a very, very busy spring and summer. Tony Husband, he's going to be on the call. We caught up with Tony before he was heading in to call Atlanta United in Seattle. Here's his view after a conference call with one of the coaches. It is that time where we welcome folks in to the hour of chaos. It is the hour of chaos, the last hour of the week, and he got his hall pass. He either got his hall pass or the period's over, the bell rang, and he's out the door. We'll ask him. Well, Tony Husband comes into the hour of chaos here on SDHAM. So, Tony, are you like out, done, and gone, or did you get a hall pass? What's up?
Well, I know we had to push this back slightly, but I had an appointment with Brian Schmetzer on a Zoom call. So I thought it would be best to talk to him first, and then I could come on and talk to you guys. I would be far more educated as we look ahead to the weekend.
So, comma, he asked, .. How is Brian Schmetzer, Tony?
Oh, he's pretty good. I think he feels pretty good about his team right now. They're doing all right. They're dealing, obviously, with the recurring Jordan Morris injury saga, which has been the story for him, sadly, this year. But you know, they're in pretty good shape. And I think they're a team that's kind of rebounded very well from Club World Cup and the experience of playing in that tournament. And they come into Atlanta this weekend, I think, in a pretty confident frame of mind.
One of the things I know that is a concern for Seattle is minutes from Obed Vargas and part of the Roldan family. And Brian has said, hey, man, I'm trying to get him breaks. I'm trying to get him breaks. He hasn't been able to get him breaks. How different a starting 11, say, from last week are you anticipating with all of the injuries, folks going in, folks coming out, and minutes accrued? How different a starting 11 are you looking at here?
Well, I mean, I would suspect that, you know, there's a couple of kind of obvious players you would suspect are going to be in. I mean, if Jackson Reagan's available, more often than not, you're going to see him come back. He was suspended last week. There's also a slot available for Nuhu that comes back from a 2-game ban. So you could look out for him coming back in. Now, very interestingly, of course, Mazowski came off the bench last week, scores a couple. Jordan Morris goes out injured. So Mazowski's having what Brian Schmetzer has referred to as a career year. So you would be surprised if he doesn't plump for him to lead the line again tomorrow. And then Pedro de la Vega, who, you know, is finding some form and was outstanding and instrumental in that victory over San Jose last week. I mean, you play put in a performance like that, even though he hasn't been a regular starter at times this season, you've got to think that he's knocking on the door to be a regular starter and to get opportunity at Atlanta tomorrow. So, I mean, I wouldn't suspect there's going to be too many changes or too many surprises from this Seattle group. They're going into another spell, obviously, with League's Cup as well. So they've got a lot of games. They've still got, they're only really one game behind in MLS on most teams. So their fixture congestion isn't too bad when it comes to MLS. But, you know, they're a team that knows when to hit the right path late in the season consistently. They've done it year after year. And everything right now is pointing towards them doing that for this year.
I do have a fixture congestion question for you, and I want to know later on as we go how you were able to navigate everything this summer, because you've had a very, very busy spring and summer, sir. And I want to navigate that in a bit. I've got a question about Jesus Ferreira. And I know that a lot of Seattle fans have been wondering, bruh, I mean, you did this in Dallas, and it seems like it's just a hiccup in Seattle. When you look at Jesus Ferreira and the expectations that were there and what isn't happening, what comes to mind when you've seen his work and not match what it was in Dallas?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, and he is a fascinating subject, actually, to chat about, because he's a player who's got great talent. I'm a huge fan of his ability. I think he's got a great football brain. I saw him in Dallas, called games in Dallas, and saw him more as a kind of goal-scoring player. I think I called his 50th goal in MLS when he was still at Dallas. And then he's come to Seattle. And some people have looked at kind of some of the metrics early in the season and felt, well, you know, he's not adjusting, he's not settling in. I mean, there's always a bit of settling in to be done. I mean, I think Dallas to Seattle, and after his connections with Dallas through the years, this was quite a big move for him as a player and an individual. But I think that actually Seattle would say to you that even when the numbers were not necessarily supporting the argument that he's playing well, actually the things he's doing, they were happy with. They love the vision and the football eye that he has, the ability to find passes, to get out of tight spaces, to do some of that stuff that, you know, I think we all, as I said, think we thought of him at Dallas as goals. I think that was our one thought on him. But they're seeing a lot more than that. And they're not always the things that the metrics always will pick up, because if it doesn't lead to a goal, you know, but if it's a key pass or if it's a key piece of defensive work, I know Brian Schmetzer has been very high on how intelligent a footballer he is, how he listens to the instructions about how the defensive side of the ball works. So I think he's starting to grow into this Seattle group. I think it's taken maybe a little bit of time and adjustment, but he's a good footballer.
Then you look at someone like Albert Rusnak, who is everybody's favorite secret agent in MLS. And the numbers that he puts up and just the ability that he has just is certifiably insane at times, what he is able to do. Obviously, a focal point for folks who are wandering into Mercedes-Benz Stadium. You got to stare at Albert Rusnak, because at times he's the spoke in the middle of that wheel that makes everything function. But at other times, he just will light you up if you don't look at him the right way. He will light you up for two or three in a hurry.
That's right. Yeah, he's got that great ability that not too many players have. And actually, if you go through MLS right now, and you know, who's got that ability in the middle of the field there to traverse those skills that you just talked about? He can be a spoke in the wheel just a little bit deeper, and then he can punish you and be deadly little when he comes forward a bit more. You know, he's got a dual threat. He's got a wonderful finish on him, a great eye again for goal, but also can do some of that other stuff in midfield that are more the domains of kind of eights and sixes in midfield as well. So great ability, having a very good season. I think Brian Schmetzer felt that really last year was his breakthrough year with Seattle, as he really started to blossom having moved himself, of course, to the Pacific Northwest a few years ago now. So a player who can cause you a lot of damage, and if he's on and really on it that day, you know, he's going to cause Atlanta some problems as well.
All right, since you've read my notes and you mentioned the A word, let's get into Atlanta. And you know, you look at this season, Atlanta fans frustrated, you know, beginning to end, frustration is there, expectations not being met, a lot of thought bubbles and question marks in fans' hands, and I'm also sure that they're there at the Children's Healthcare of Atlanta training ground. From what you've been able to see this season leading into this weekend, what are some of your prevailing thoughts when it comes to Atlanta United?
Well, I mean, one of the first thought is just kind of like, well, what's happened? I mean, what has gone so wrong? I don't understand this. I mean, you know, back in February, all of us supposedly wise people are asked to kind of put our predictions for the season out there. And I look at the league and, you know, and I'm, my goodness, it's one of the toughest things you do all year is trying to predict what is going to happen across the kind of almost 10 months of an MLS year. So there you are sitting at the beginning of February. And you're looking at, you know, you're obviously influenced by how last season ended. You're influenced by what teams have done in the transfer market. You're influenced by changes in coaching, the CV of the coach coming in. And you're thinking, well, I'm thinking anyway, this is a team that's going to be up there and contending. And I also, one of the things I always look at the back at that time of year is I look at what the fixture list is going to look like for the team. So, for example, I didn't put down Miami to kind of finish right at the top of the East because I thought Club World Cup, Leagues Cup, older roster, I don't know whether they'll still be there right at the end of November and into December. I looked at Atlanta and thought, no Club World Cup, no CONCACAF, no Open Cup, Leagues Cup. But I thought, well, this is a team that, you know, with the investment in the players as well, this team's got to be up there. So unfortunately, there just seems to be a level of dysfunction. It seems to be a team of parts that are not all clicking together. I think you look at the front end and the back end, and there's just the cohesion, for whatever reason, hasn't been there. And I think Ronnie Dyer has pretty much run out of patience now, in terms of giving, you know, everybody their fair crack at showing that they're worth for him. And I think we're going to see quite a considerable turnover in the roster in the months and in the next season to come. Because he's not come here to be managing in MLS, having won an MLS Cup. And he's a manager that, you know, has worked in Europe and could, I'm sure, walk back into Europe if he wants to at any time. He didn't come here to be languishing 13th in the Eastern Conference. He came here to, you know, to win an MLS Cup. So his patience, I think, is pretty much worn thin with this now. And so the rest of this season is going to be interesting to see how we might get a little bit of insight into how next year is going to look. But then I suspect the start of next season, I'll be sitting there in February again looking at a roster and thinking, well, now surely this is the year because they've changed it and it's much better.
Tony Husband, Apple TV, getting ready to break down everything with Seattle and Atlanta for us as he is fresh off of his conference call with Brian Schmetzer, where he got all of the intel, none of which he can share until the whistle blows on Apple TV and MLS season pass. But what we have been able to see this season with Atlanta United, though, you do get that the frustration with the higher profile, the higher salaried players, but you've also had the opportunity to see from Atlanta United the development side of it, where a lot of the younger talent has come through. Obviously, you look at the Efren Morales deal as a part of that, where Efra was viewed as highly as he was, where CF Montreal is, you know, 450 plus 350 in a sell-on. You're seeing the younger players step up for Atlanta United. Will Riley, Efra, Noah Cobb, Jay Fortune, all that building has been there, and you got to see that, unfortunately, through necessity this year.
Yeah, that's right. And do you know what? You know, there are times it's good for young talent to get their opportunity in the first team in professional league sport. And there are times when it's difficult as well. Now, longer term, they'll probably learn a lot from these experiences of being on, let's be frank, you know, what is the table doesn't lie. It's a bad team right now. But right now, it's tough. It is tough for young players to be in a team that is losing and is finding ways to lose and is not winning games. I feel a bit for some of these players like Riley who come in, and I mean, they're doing well, but you know, they're not really getting, it's difficult to do so in a team that is struggling like this. So, you know, the moments you want to pitch those younger players in and really give them their legs and their experience is, you know, when a team is in a good place, when the camp is has got the harmony, and you see them flourish and you let them go, and you see what they can do. They might not make it, but, you know, they're in the best position and they're given the best possible opportunity to do so. It's tough right now for anybody coming into this Atlanta group, particularly if you don't have a lot of experience.
So then part of the broadcast, when you're in your open, you have your players to watch. Can you spill any of the Earl Grey and let us know who the player to watch is for Atlanta United? Is it somebody like a Bart Sleash who has just completely and totally lit it up numerically over the last month? Have you decided that yet as to who the player to watch is going to be?
Well, the honest answer to that is I don't think it's been decided yet. I can tell you that right now. Our producer will send a note today. But also the other thing is I generally always defer to the color commentators for the player to watch and the spotlight, because I feel like really, you know, that is where their level of expertise comes in and their understanding, having been players themselves. So I generally will defer to my broadcast partner, who, you know, most weeks is Ross Smith, and who is a great judge of a player and a very, very insightful analyst. So I normally would defer to him. I would suspect Sleash is, there's a good prospect it could be him. You know, who knows? But at this point, if the email comes through while we're on air, though, I'm happy to say who it'll be. But I haven't seen it yet. But
SDHAM is suggesting Bart Sleash for the player to watch in the open. Literally just ship that along.
There we go. Well, it could well be. So you come tomorrow night, you see that, then you know where it came from.
Yeah, I'll see you on the pitch, and I'll sit there and I'll ask him, go, hey, what's it looking like? And we'll figure it out. I do want to kind of tour MLS with you, but I also want to wrap up the Atlanta-Seattle discussion with what kind of a match are you anticipating? This is the last match heading into League's Cup, and then there are other things to look at. Andrew Thomas should be in net, I think, for Seattle. Stephen Fry on his recovery, and Brian Schmetzer had promised Andrew he was going to get League's Cup, so you may not see Stephen Fry till August 10. What kind of a match are you expecting at Mercedes-Benz?
Yeah, and on that point, yeah, Brian Schmetzer said in the media this week, you know, Fry is the very early stages of the protocol. So, I would suspect, you know, there's no reason to rush him back in. Thomas is getting a good opportunity in League's Cup. I suspect, you know, look, we need to see a response from Atlanta. I mean, for 45 minutes last week, he looked pretty good against Charlotte, and then it was just a horrendous start to the second half and all downhill from there. I mean, Ronnie Dyler spoke very strongly to us this week about the need for responsibility and for change. And as I mentioned, you know, his patience is clearly worn pretty thin. Now, if that has been conveyed in a similar way to the team, which I suspect it probably has this week, then clearly he's going to be looking for a response. So, you know, I would like to think we're going to see an Atlanta team come out of the traps pretty well. But we're going to see them come up against a Seattle group who are strong but have been giving away and shipping goals. A team, though, that's come out of their experience of Club World Cup very positively. 5 unbeaten since then. And I think that they learned some lessons from coming up against some of those very elite teams that they played. And they're reaping the benefits of it at the moment. So I think it's really important that Atlanta try and take control of the game and try and start well. Because I think if you concede first against this Seattle group, I think it could be a very difficult night.
Another couple of minutes here with Tony Husband before he has to actually go back to work, as he's hanging out with us here on the morning show. This is, I guess, the Lanyap section where we just kind of throw some things at you. As a part of our breakdown here in the morning, we have what we refer to as the Twitch pitch. And those are the folks that are watching us, and they'll just have random conversation. They'll have conversations with each other. They'll ask questions and our board. And one of the questions is, and this is a question that I answered, and I wanted to get yours. David wanted to know, which kit number combo is the most visible in a broadcast, just in case he's playing pickup and David gets Mike and Jason to call. But when it comes to calling matches, how easy, what are there number combinations for you that are more difficult than others? Is it the 5, the 8, the 9, and the 3 that might have a 1 in front of it? What are the number combos that you have to kind of sit there and think twice about when you're calling a match?
Yeah, it's a really good point. I think Atlanta's isn't always great because of the striped nature of the shirts. And we're quite high at Mercedes-Benz Stadium as well. So you are sometimes reliant on the kind of double checking something.
God love the monitor.
Absolutely. The monitor is crucial. It's funny though. I mean, I go back, I actually was lucky enough to call El Trafico last week. LA Galaxy were wearing, you know, just clear white shirts. And it's the 97th minute or 96th minute or whatever it was. It's 3-2. And LA Galaxy have made five changes, four of them in one go. They brought on four subs simultaneously. That is a commentator's nightmare. I mean, I even had a stats guy next to me, and we were, while the game was playing, we were still trying to be certain who had come off because they couldn't keep up with it with the board. But anyway, we're in a 96th minute, and you know, it's a key game, it's a big moment. Ball goes into the box, and the white shirt and the black number on the back of Maya Yoshida rises up into the air and heads the ball in. And I followed and covered Yoshida when he played for Southampton 10 years ago. So I have watched him play many, many times. And I was just hugely relieved that in this mass of players, as the ball goes into the box in the final seconds of El Trafico, number four jumps up quite clearly and heads the ball into the net. And I was able to say Yoshida as he went up for the ball. It could have been one of many others that was in the box at that moment, and it probably would have been a different sounding commentary. So that gives you an idea. A good white shirt, black number is always good. Black on gold or yellow, you know, so Columbus is quite, yeah. It's quite good. Nashville can be quite good on that front. Yeah. The kind of light faded colors, the light blue of Charlotte sometimes can be a little bit difficult. And I suppose it's just, you know, we're in a world these days where the numbers are nuts. You know, we have number 99s, the 77s, 86s, you know. And when I first when I grew up watching football in England, you know, it was 1 to 11. It was, you know, relatively simple. So sometimes you can get caught out by a 17 that actually was a 7 or a 7. It's number 17 that's down, and you've caught a glimpse on the back of the 7, and you think it's number 7 who's down, and there's a pile of players around them, and you can't see clearly. So yeah, I mean, you know, you're getting an insight really there into the life of what it's like to be a play-by-play, because an awful lot of the time you spend is on recognition research. You know, to make sure you know who's got the ball and who has it and what number they wear. Another one, a little trick I have is I have a whole selection of these Sharpies. Mm-hmm. And before a game, if I have time, I watch the warm-ups and I'll watch them using a pair of binoculars or something. And I'll look at the color of the boots players wear, and I'll mark. So if a player's in blue boots, I'll mark that next to his name. A lot of them wear these fluorescent kind of yellow or orange boots. It's hard when the players are wearing white boots because there's no way of drawing white on a piece of white card.
Right.
But those are all little tricks of the trade to try and help you recognize things, because obviously that, you know, that ultimately is the most important aspect in many ways, or one of the most important aspects of what I'm doing is to, you know, make sure I'm recognizing the players.
Yep, I'm going hairstyles usually. It's
Hair is a good one. Obviously, love it if a player has his hair dyed blonde for the day. The only problem is I've seen teams in England where every player has done the dyed blonde for the weekend, and you've suddenly got 11 blonde-haired players.
Yeah, one more and I'll let you go. Since you mentioned El Trafico, I have to ask you about what it was like in the booth calling the chaos that happened late, where you have a hard tackle on David Martinez, then Segura decides to take his hands and go north of the shoulders. What was it like in that moment of chaos in the booth?
It was kind of like the moment of just that was the tipping point of the night. It was just typical chaos. It's funny. I mean, it was my first El Trafico to actually be at and to call. Everyone had said, look, you're going to love it. You're going to see that it's the most intense game in MLS. I mean, I would like now to, you know, I'd like to see an Atlanta Charlotte in the flesh. I'd like to see a Portland Seattle in the flesh, you know, in some of these games. But I think there is an intensity about El Trafico at the moment, which for me right now marks it just slightly ahead of the rest in terms of just the level of kind of edge to the game. I mean, when LA Galaxy arrived at the stadium and went out for a wander onto the field, this is well over an hour before kickoff. The reception they got from the LAFC fans, I actually sent a text to somebody and said, that's the first time I think I've really seen that in America. That kind of, you know, a really, really hostile welcome onto the field. And then when the kind of the chaos ensued late on, there was an almost feeling of predictability about it. Look, we waited, I think, 89 minutes or 90 minutes, and we finally spilt over. And my view on it was really in the call was just like, look, there's going to be so much going on for the next 20, 30 seconds. I kind of almost just laid out and said, and I think I said something like, you know, well, here we go. And then we just let the chaos ensue. Yep. And then a little bit like the referee almost did, you know, he had to kind of like, you're going to do what you're going to do. And when it's all done, I've got a collection of cards and they're different colors and I'm going to start dishing them out. So, great experience to do and great atmosphere. And I hope we brought home the atmosphere to, you know, to people at the end with the drama, because it was, you know, it was an exciting game and proves that, you know, this is not, it's not always about, you know, first v second, third v fourth. And, you know, I hope we have the same again tomorrow. You know, these teams are having vastly different seasons, but they're both teams capable of producing memorable moments in front of big crowds and great atmospheres.
And as always, we always look forward to the call, and you have officially survived the hour of chaos here in the 10 o'clock on a Friday, where we're getting everybody revved up for the weekend. By the way, behind me that you cannot see, I have an AFC Wimbledon Plymouth Argyle playoff scarf.
Oh, I was at that game.
And it's back in there, so I just wanted to let you know that it does exist here in the office.
That's good. That's good. That I was at that game, and Plymouth were absolutely terrible that day, all the way to Wembley, and that's not a place to lose. But you know, well done Wimbledon, and yeah, it's good to see some Plymouth Argyle green down in the deep south.
Hey, you know me. If it's going to be in here, I've driven her crazy with all of the scarves and the office here, triple rack shower rods. Seriously, that is what has worked back here. They're on the doors and they have made sure everything fits. Thanks for dropping by. You now have the garage door opener, so that link that was sent to you, literally anytime if you're bored on a Friday, bored any time of the week, you can come in and crash and sit there and say, hey, I'm here and I'm walking and getting coffee or doing whatever. You now have the keys to the kingdom. You can come by any time, Tony. Looking forward to it.
I appreciate it. Always good to talk to you. And, you know, good luck to Atlanta, obviously, tomorrow for the rest of the season as well. And I hope there's a few brighter spots as you kind of, you know, march towards an era of probably more change.
No doubt. We'll see you at MBS tomorrow, Tony. Thanks again.
Take care.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It's a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and more importantly, on your life. Listen and follow Jill on Money on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
As always, great to have Tony on with us. And traditionally, when we are on SDHAM, Friday mornings at 10, traditionally is the slot where we like to bring in our folks from Apple TV, NMLS Season Pass, and have them break down the season as they've seen it so far to date. Doesn't necessarily have to be tied to Atlanta United. Could be any of the voices that are in the game, and we've had pretty much all of them cycle through at least once so far this year, and it's been a real fun to listen to get their perspectives on what's going on with Apple TV, with Major League Soccer, and if they're calling the match with Atlanta, Atlanta United. This is the Best of SDHAM, brought to you by the SDH Network here, 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. One interview down, two others to go to kind of take you through what we do on a weekly basis when it comes to profiling the sport, all the news that's going on, and all the stories that you might not get the chance to listen to first and foremost, that we get the chance to bring to the table and remind you about here on the Best of SDHAM. Sticking with our conversation, getting ready for Atlanta United and Seattle Sounders. It's our friend Nico Moreno, who is a part of the crew at Sounder at Heart and at Pulso Sports. He's also seen on Washington Sports Tonight on Q13 out in the Seattle area. But we get to catch up with him bright and early West Coast time every Thursday morning. This time around, it was a chance to get a little opposition research and find out what has been going on in Seattle as Seattle got ready to travel from one end of the U.S. to the other to take on Atlanta United on your Saturday. Here's our catching up with Thursdays with Nico. Because of what is happening this weekend, it is an interesting dynamic that is in play. It is a very early morning in Seattle on the Pacific Coast. The sun is shining. Folks are waking up. They're on their second cups of coffee. And Seattle is getting ready to come here to take on Atlanta United. And we get opposition research plus the tour of Major League Soccer with our buddy Nico Moreno from Pulso Sports and Sounder at Heart. Look at you.
Hey, what's going on, guys? How am I coming on?
You're solid, man. I'm looking at that studio space with the curtain and the football and all the things, man. You are ready to rock and roll, man.
Yeah, I mean, we're trying it. I don't know if I love the flag just yet. It's like a little 10-year anniversary flag of the Sounders. Yeah. I'm looking to frame some jerseys, but it's incredibly expensive. So if you know somebody, if the audience knows somebody that can do it for a deal, let me know. Because I have been unpleasantly surprised of how expensive that can get. Yeah. But excited to be on as always, John. We're on the second cup of Joe today with the Cougar mug. Yeah. You know, we have All-Star Week, Skills Challenge, all kinds of stuff. We got, as you mentioned, a big game for Atlanta. I think it's a big game for Seattle as well. So lots to talk about.
Yep. So what I will do is I will hold on to the opposition research to the end of things, and we'll get to this point. All-Star game, no Hamas, no Jordi Alba, no Messi. So technically Messi and friends, some of Messi's friends were there, some were not. And the conversation is now, what are you going to do? So I think this is literally staring at the rule book and looking at articles, and is it an A, an N, or a V, and figuring out what's going to happen. Because traditionally, if you don't show up to All-Star, it's a suspension. And basically, same thing happened as Zlatan in 2018. He's like, yeah, whatever, don't care. There's talk that it could be a match and not the next match, which is against Cincinnati this weekend. What's your vibe tell you?
I think that, unfortunately, the league is going to give Messi a pass because it's Messi. They'll probably try to move that suspension for another not-so-important game. This Cincinnati-Miami, I feel like it's going to draw a lot of eyes, a lot of attention. It's a big game for Miami. When it comes to Messi not playing and this whole discourse about, you know, the face of the franchise, the face of MLS in general, not playing. Look, I don't know how you feel, John, but I'm not having a heart attack over it, and I'm not like incredibly upset about the situation, but I am disappointed. I'm disappointed at Messi. You know, you have a lot of people talk about, you know, maybe he knows his worth, maybe his money, maybe his whatever. Maybe it is just rest. But whatever it is, I feel like I expected better from Messi, such a competitor, such a, you know, phenomenal icon of soccer, and this being his league, essentially, I thought that he would at least be out there and you know, want to compete and want to at least rally the troops or do absolutely anything to kind of be involved, because, you know, he is the face. So although we know that he's getting fairly compensated, mm-hmm. I don't think that Messi needs more money. And I think that he's more thinking of his legacy. He hasn't been able to win anything in MLS. You know, obviously one League's Cup, and that's all good and great. But aside from that, he hasn't done much, right? Yeah. So why not be part of all these things that kind of continue to grow who you are in the legacy of things? And look, I understand that people are going to say, oh, MLS is nothing. What does that do for a guy that's won World Cups and Champions Leagues? And look, I get it. But at the end of the day, there is going to be a part of history that the young kids that followed his league and the tons of fans who went to Austin trying to see Lionel Messi with the All-Stars that were completely disappointed in the fact that he wasn't there. So I do think that it does hurt it a little bit. It's nothing that's going to make us forget that he's the best soccer player to ever do it over the last 10 years. But it is disappointing, at least to me.
Yeah. And I mean, you're not the only one that Messi League Soccer is where it is right now. And MLS gets the win last night against Liga MX. And you have a 16-year-old score the goal for Liga MX. And as I said in hour number one, I said, look, when someone comes knocking on Cholos's door when he turns 18, they're going to get a check. It might be from Europe. It might be from somebody. But Cholos is getting a check on a very talented 16-year-old.
Yeah. I mean, look, I've compared him to Pedri in the past. You know, I've heard it in the broadcast yesterday, Iniesta. Whatever it is, this is the young, talented player that's good enough to be a point of conversation in a league in Liga MX that has a hard time with it. If you look at MX as a league and the domestic talent, Mexican teenagers, you know, Mexico has had success at the youth level as a national team, and those kids never seem to translate immediately. So this kid is that talented, and you can see it in the way he plays the game, his composure in front of goal yesterday to put that goal away, becoming the youngest player to obviously score an MLS game. He's also the youngest player, Mexican player, to score it in a Liga MX game. So this kid is the real deal. I think that shows that Tijuana, it's kind of rubbing their hands and, you know, excited that this is yet another stage that their young star is out there performing. But man, he's the real deal. He's a guy that essentially has kind of stolen the spotlight a little bit from Obed Vargas, who was also at the All-Star game yesterday. Because if you obviously look at the call-ups by the national team, I mean, he's the other guy that's kind of the young guy that might take that spotlight from an extremely talented player like Obed Vargas. So we're going to have him here for Leagues Cup, so that's going to be interesting. The Sounders do get to play Tijuana, so we'll see how he also plays in that tournament. But, man, the kid's the real deal. I have no doubt in my mind.
And obviously, Leagues Cup, we're looking forward to to all of that there stuff. I want to kind of reverse things a little bit because traditionally I know we play Cliffhanger toward the end, and that leads us into previews. But considering that there is a match that we do need to preview with a bunch of different ways that are attached to it, I want to save the opposition research for the end, and I'm going to do Cliffhanger right now. We do have a question in the Twitch pitch for you, and it is there going to be any Twitch pitch travel planning incoming for the matchup on Saturday? Is anyone coming from the West Coast to the East Coast?
Not that I know in terms of media. I wanted to. I really did myself. I unfortunately, my daughter plays her first Premier League tournament. You know, we had that conversation and she was a little disappointed. She's going to play, I think it's called the Bigfoot tournament or something. Sure. But it's her first time playing it at the Premier level. I definitely would not make it. I would have been extremely excited to go down there and obviously not just visit you guys, but, you know, visit Chris and Garth and the city in general. But unfortunately, I will not be making the trip.
Okay. So if anyone does make the trip, let us know so that way they can be directed to where the Twitch pitch hangs out so they can have the five-stripe carpet rolled out to them. So if anybody comes from the West to the match, send up a flare so we can direct them to where they can go and see everybody and be introduced to the fans that are here, and those of us in the Twitch pitch and obviously those of us here at SDH. But if anybody makes the trip, let us know and we'll kind of play a cruise director a little bit and let everybody know where they need to be, okay?
Oh, yeah, I would love to. I think maybe if anybody's going, it might be Jackson Feltz, who I know he has or he had Jason on his show yesterday, I believe. Yep. So maybe he'd be the one guy to go. But it is in my plans. It is something that I'm looking forward to doing at one point. Need to see y'all. Need to see Atlanta. Need to see the city. Need to see the team. But unfortunately, it's not this weekend.
Well, and I think that you probably would end up almost either ostracized or put in a lower floor in the house if you didn't make it to the Premier League match, I would think. you would be like sent outside to the backyard if you didn't make to that first Premier League match.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that as it happens sometimes with my wife and daughter, they might hide those feelings. And then when it's all said and done, you're still in the doghouse. Oh, yeah, go ahead and go. Yeah, no, I'm not falling for that trick.
No. No, you are not. Go ahead and go. Yeah. And then you have to make up like four or five different events to make up for that event that you lost. I know how this works. It's like, yeah, go ahead and go. And you're sitting there going, no, that didn't sound right. No, it's just, that did not sound right. And yes, and also a reminder to folks, the Sports Bra Collection, Female Players in Need, at the Faction Tailgate, too. So that is another thing that we'll remind folks about tomorrow. Okay, let's do cliffhanger now, talk about the other matches in the league, and then we'll lead into Atlanta and Seattle because there's a lot to talk about there. You've got Crew and the Purple Team, and these are matches Friday. So you have a split schedule. You have half a dozen matches on Friday, everybody else on Saturday to get everybody into Leagues Cup. Crew and Purple Team. Crew is an even money plus 100. The Purple Team on the road a plus 233. The draw a plus 277. What do you think?
Yeah, I like the draw. Orlando's had some adverse scores. They're coming from a positive result. Columbus Crew themselves had some issues with DC United. I'm trying to figure out, obviously, what's going to happen with that attack. I mean, I know that AZ had not been a guy that was consistently there in the starting lineup up top, but he was a very good player and a guy that was producing for that team. Now he's no longer going to be there. I think it was good that Gosta got his first goal. Rossi seems to be on fire. You saw his talent yesterday. But I feel like Orlando, even with their own issues, I feel like this is going to be a game that is going to go 2-2. There's going to be some goals. There's going to be some mistakes. But at the end of the day, I think they're going to be evenly matched because Columbus, in my opinion, is not at full strength because they have some holes they're missing in that attacking side.
No doubt. Revs in Montreal, Dallas in NYC, Dynamo in LAG, LAFC in Portland. LAFC a big favorite at a minus 204, draws a plus 362. Portland on the road, a plus 465.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I want to see the compos on goals because I got to tell you that the first thing that came to mind for me here was I'm going 4.5 no matter what. Hopefully the numbers are going my way. I doubt it. I'm pretty sure that Vegas knows that, that he might be one. What are the numbers?
Plus 239 for 4.5.
I'm taking that. I'm taking that all day. Obviously, LAFC has issues of their own. Segura went Sprewell on Fagundes, and, you know, he's suspended. That team lost, obviously, Aaron Long. LAFC has issues defensively. I'm not sure who they're going to play back there. Portland, regardless of having issues of their own, and the huge hole that not having Anthony has left for this team on the creative end, attacking end. I do think that they'll be able to put LAFC under some pressure. I still think LAFC will come out on top. They're the better team overall, but this is going to be more than 4.5. There's going to be 5 goals. It might be a 3-3 draw, whatever it is, but there's definitely going to be goals on the line. I really do think LAFC will win this one, but, you know, it would not surprise me incredibly if somehow this turns into another El Trafico where LAFC cannot, you know, finish the game off.
Saturday at Heart and Pulso Sports, our buddy Nico Moreno hanging out with us on Thursdays with Nico, the other late night on Friday night. San Diego FC hosting Nashville. San Diego is on the plus side, but they're favored at a plus 123. Draws a plus 269. Nashville on the road, a plus 188. What say you?
Give me Nashville. I'm taking Nashville in this one. I think that San Diego had some struggles, man. I thought Vancouver should have won that game. They were lucky that they didn't. I mean, there were a couple of inches on a wide shot that went a little bit too wide. But I really do think that San Diego has some issues up front. I think the Dryer and Chukwuemeka are going to continue to be players that are going to be exciting to watch. But when you're putting those balls inside the box, they're just not that killer as they had before. They're going to need someone that's going to be clinical in front of goal. Again, I still love the identity. I love the principles. I love the concepts. They're an extremely fun team. But against Nashville, you really got to have your stuff together, because although they've had some, you know, some games where everything hasn't worked out exactly the way BJ wants it, I think that this is a team that, if it working in all cylinders, they can be very good. And I'm not afraid of San Diego at home. So I definitely do think that Nashville will take this one.
On Saturday, it all starts 15 minutes ahead of everybody else. Messi and friends in FC Cincinnati. Assuming that Messi and Jordi Alba are a part of the discussion, right now they're a minus 103. Favorite at home on the minus side. FC Cincinnati is a plus 220, draws a plus 313.
Yeah, this is a very interesting one. I do like Cincinnati, and I think that Evander is going to play with a big chip on his shoulder against the other MVP. And look, Messi has been red hot, right? 6 out of 7 games with the Braves. I mean, they're an offense that seems to be unstoppable. I thought that the character and response against Red Bulls was interesting, right? They go down a goal, they go down early, and they're able to kind of get it back. They completely dominate Red Bulls. They're moving them forward. I think Messi also has a lot to prove, or feels like he does. He had a phenomenal game. He was red hot. But I do think that Cincinnati is going to be able to control that game. I like what Orellano is doing. I really do think that defensively they're getting a lot tighter there for Pat Noonan's team. So I do like Cincinnati. And this is another game that I think is going to be at least 3.5.
Okay, so let's go down that road. So you said 3.5. So let's see when things change in this particular matchup with Messi and friends. 3.5, a minus 108. So, yeah, you're kind of like, 4 is a plus 162. 4.5, a plus 216.
Maybe too rich for my blood, especially because I feel like Cincinnati is not going to want to open up. They're going to want to put Miami in this, like, wrestler's choking hold, and they're going to want to just limit what Segovia and Kramoski and all these players can do. They're not going to be as open as at times Red Bulls was, which was insane how much space they were given. I mean, Busquets, that pass that he puts in, I mean, it's a clear-cut, like, freeway in between. So I don't think Cincinnati is going to be that gappy. I think they're going to be very disciplined, but I think they'll take this game.
Charlotte, Toronto. Charlotte's a big favorite on the minus side. DC and Austin, I don't think the juice boxers really care. DC's actually favored at home at a plus 154. Philly and Colorado, Philly's a big favorite at home. Fire and Red Bulls, Fire are favored on the minus side at home. All caps, a dog at home to Minnesota United at a plus 148. RSL on the minus side, favored against San Jose, take the over. Vancouver and Sporting Vancouver, the late game on Saturday night, at a minus 213, Sporting Kansas City a plus 482. Okay, opposition research time. Atlanta and Seattle. Atlanta right now a plus 161, draws a plus 254, Seattle's a plus 150 on the road. Now, from what we have seen on this side of the country, Stephen Fry back at practice, Jordan Morris has had surgery, JP has had surgery, Joao Paulo. Where is the state of play? Who isn't going to be around for the weekend when Seattle comes to this part of the world?
Two for sure. Well, neither of them are going to be necessarily playing in this game. Steph might go and just be the captain he is, obviously. But in terms of playing, he will not play. He has not been involved full in practice. As you know, there's a protocol where he needs to be full in practice for a couple of those training sessions. He was at training yesterday. He did dress up. It was the very first time we've seen Stephen Fry dress up. He did some running. He did some mild goalkeeping work. And then he left the facility. immediately got on his car and was gone way before practice was over. So that tells me that there is no rush to get him back. I didn't expect that to be the case. Andrew Thomas has held the fort pretty good, so Steph will not play. Jordan Morris, obviously, we're told that it's going to be 6 weeks before he could even do anything on the ball, any running. They're going to be very cautious, per Brian's words. You know, shoulder, whenever you're forward and you're going shoulder to shoulder, you're going to have to be very careful. So he's not going to be there. And Joe Pablo, which was good news because of the initial diagnosis, which was that he was going to be out the entire season. They thought that he had torn his ACL, and that wasn't the case. Apparently, they went in to look into the knee, and the ligament was intact. Surprise, surprise. This is excellent for a player that was taking that pretty roughly. Brian ended up calling it just a cleanup, basically. So they will have him back at some point this season. There's no timeline right now, but I'm hearing it could be as early as 3 weeks to 4 weeks. So that's pretty good for this team that needs some depth at center mid. Christian Roldan has played every minute of every game. He's close to 2,000 minutes already just in MLS alone. He's definitely passed that in all comps. Same goes for Robert Vargas. A ton of minutes. They're 1 and 2 when it comes to minutes for the Seattle Sounders. So that's going to be interesting how it plays out. There was a bit of an injury that was interesting. We're going to ask Brian today, but Paul Rothrock took a big fall during training yesterday, and I don't think anyone saw it other than myself. It was on his wrist. They ended up taping it pretty tightly. It's just wrist, but you know, we'll see where that goes. It could limit the player or not. We're going to find out where Paul Rothrock is. Other than that, team looks healthy beyond that limit. Pedro de la Vega looks lights out. Once again, playing on the left side, had another banger from like 25 yards out during training. Yebar looks excellent. I think that this team, at least the vibes were high during training going into this game.
The starting lineup in the shootout with San Jose, obviously we talked about Andrew Thomas in net, back four, left to right, Baker Whiting, Bell, Yamar, and KKR, Cosarienzi. Roldan and Vargas, you mentioned 1 and 2 in minutes. That, to me, was something that Brian Schmetzer has been trying to get them rest, but he couldn't get it with the Colorado match, and because of the Colorado match, they couldn't sit. Because of the street fight with San Jose, Roldan and Vargas are still cranking up minutes. I'm intrigued to see how those minutes are monitored there. De La Vega, Rusnak, Ferreira, and then Jordan Morris up top. How different are you anticipating the starting 11 with everything that we've already talked about with what happened in San Jose? How different are you anticipating it for this matchup?
I think the pivots will remain. I really do. Obed Vargas only played 20-something minutes in the All-Star game. He actually didn't look particularly good in the game necessarily, but I think that he is going to run it back. Maybe there is a 70%... No. There's maybe a 50% chance that Danny Leyva plays next to Christian Roldan, but Christian Roldan is it. He apparently does not care about his body. We talked to him yesterday. He seems to be ready to go. He understands how important this matchup is for the team moving forward. So he's definitely going to play. The big changes are going to be clearly at center back. Jackson Reagan will take his rightful place right next to Yemer Gomez-Andrade. I think that Alex Roldan will play on the right. I think Reed Baker-Whiting will stay at left back. He has been really good. Him and Pedro de la Vega were exchanging so perfectly in the San Jose game. It was probably the best part of the Sounders attack was on that left side. So I think that that's going to remain. But other than that, the rest of the lineup should look similar. Paul Rothrock is now a question mark because, again, that wrist injury, don't know where that's at. We'll ask Brian Schmetzer today. I do believe that we're going to see a similar lineup to what we saw against San Jose, except for those couple of changes there with Jackson Reagan and Alex Roldan.
Then up top, because of the Jordan Morris injury, the benefactor was Danny Masofsky, who got a brace in that matchup against San Jose. Is it just going to – so when you're looking at forwards in the attack, what are you looking up for that front four?
I think it's going to be Masofsky, Ferreira, Albert Rusnak, and Pedro de la Vega on the left.
Okay, so what is it when you look at Atlanta, obviously under other years and other circumstances, you're looking at certain individuals and you're looking for shootouts and things that are going to be, you know, 4.5, 5.5, what have you. From your conversations with us that you have every single week and you're looking at Atlanta United, is there an early vibe about how Seattle is looking at an Atlanta United team that has not achieved what they want to achieve in 2025?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of the sense of, you know, money doesn't achieve it all. There's clearly an issue with Ronnie Dyla and his ability to install his soccer module. And the first outlook is that this is the winnable game, or beyond that, maybe a must win going to Atlanta, which is odd because Atlanta's always been, you know, a team that this side of the Pacific Northwest respects highly, going to Mercedes-Benz Arena and everything that goes with a very good Atlanta team. But everybody feels like this is the game that the Sounders should and must win. Clearly a team that has had some issues defensively, and I think that the entire fan base looking at a team that has scored 3 goals in 2 consecutive games, that if anything, the offense has looked really good, feels like they should go out to Atlanta and score another 3 and make it yet another game where 3 goals are scored. Now, can't Seattle manage the games and not allow it to kind of slip up the way you did against Colorado and essentially against San Jose, because Andrew Thomas stops a classic vintage bicycle Joseph Martinez kick there at the end of the game that could have equalized. So that's kind of the overall sense from the fan base here, is that Seattle should go out there, should get a win, and it should be by multiple goals, which, you know, might be sound disrespectful. And we'll see how Atlanta can, you know, show up to play that game.
How different is Andrew Thomas compared to Stephen Fry? How are they between the sticks personality wise? How do they carry themselves differently?
I think that Andrew Thomas is more fiery. He's way more aggressive. He's a guy that is aggressive on the way he plays, the way he goes at balls, the way that he handles his back line. Stephen Fry just does it by leadership. He is assertive, but he does it very concise. He gives instructions, but he does it to certain players. I think that he has a better command of his troops, kind of. Andrew Thomas has to do a lot more yelling, in my opinion. He does a lot more of the screaming here, screaming there. I think that there is a level of confidence and trust and, you know, continuity of what Stephen Fry does as a goalkeeper. But he's been great. The personality wise, they are very different. Obviously he's the experienced, put together, methodological type of person that is Stephen Fry, and the fiery kind of feisty sort of Andrew Thomas. I think that's the biggest difference between both of them.
Okay. I imagine after you're off the air with us today, you're heading to the Providence and Swedish hairstylist and delicatessen. What are you anticipating over there?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, it's going to be obviously a short practice. They travel right after to Atlanta. But my main concern, or what I'll be looking at, is, as I mentioned, the Paul Rothrock thing. We're going to be looking at lineups and see what's kind of going to happen there with specifically that right side. I think Pedro's for sure going to be starting in this one. I think they're gonna run it back. I do want to see where Stephen Fry is, right? If he at least practices in full today, will tell me that next week there might be a chance that he plays for the next game. But that's kind of the things that I'll be looking at there today.
All right. So hit the promo for me. Where do folks need to go and what do they need to see?
Yes, of course. We'll be recording what we learned this week with Jeremiah O'Shan. We're probably going to have a special guest in that one as well. So wait for that to drop on Friday morning. Obviously on Monday, we're going to do the Lobby and Scorchers kickoff with Ari. We'll break down the entire weekend, see what happened there in Atlanta. And then I'll be on today, actually. I'll be on in Washington Sports Wrap on Fox Seattle, Fox 13 Seattle. So if you want to check that out as well, 7:30 Washington Sports Wrap, I'll be on.
As always, my friend, great to see you. Love the new digs. I know that it's a work in progress. Advice on frames. the boss actually has been the one who has put all of the jerseys in the frames themselves. We go and buy the frame, and then she puts the jersey inside the frame herself. So if you are confident in your assembly of things inside frames, buy the frame, and then you do the handiwork yourself, so that way you're satisfied with how it goes.
Yeah, I might just do that. I might just, you know, do that, look at some YouTube videos and figure it out myself, because, you know, it does get expensive. I have three really nice ones. I have, like, my pride and joy was a Ozzy Alonso gift with the Xbox Halo black jersey with a whole bunch of signatures. So it's, I got some good ones, but at least three of them that I want framed. So it's going to get expensive.
Yeah, so just focus on the frames, do the handiwork inside the frame yourselves. And we can't wait to see it as Studio Nico continues to grow and evolve. Love you, my friend. We will see you next week. And hopefully we will have a great matchup on Saturday night to talk about next week, in addition to Leagues Cup and all the things.
Should be fun.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It's a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and more importantly, on your life. Listen and follow Jill on Money on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
As always, it's great to catch up with our friend Nico Moreno and find out what's going on in his brain when it comes to not just Seattle, but it did work this time with Seattle playing Atlanta United later on your Saturday night, but also what's going on around Major League Soccer and whatever else is going on in his mind. This is the best of SDHAM from the Soccer Down Here Network. SDH Network brings it to you across all of our social media platforms, 9:05 Eastern Time until 11:05 and beyond, on our Twitch page at twitch.tv/soccerdownhere, on our X channel, and also all over the social media that are there with you. So it is on Twitch, it is on Twitter, and it is a part of your daily activities when it comes to everything on YouTube as well, on all the SDH social media channels where you get the best of clips and all of that. So last interview that we have this week, Atlanta United's unified team is one of the cool stories attached to the franchise itself. And the fun part about covering Atlanta United's unified team is they are doing things in this month that they have not done in program history. For the record, they have yet to lose in any of their matches so far in any competition. And they're going to be facing some stiff competition coming up next week in the Genuine Cup. The Genuine Cup for Unified Athletes is going to be on the campus of Rice University, and it is going to bring together 40 clubs from around the world tied to either franchises or national teams. They're going to be playing for the Genuine Cup trophy. We caught up with head coach Marty Jellamy for Atlanta United's unified team to find out about what the trip was like going to Toronto and traversing a border, what it was like in the All-Star to have a couple of your players represent Atlanta United in the All-Star match at Palmer Field in Austin, Texas this past week, and what it's going to be like to perform in this tournament. He ain't wasting no time. He is wasting no time. Speaking English very, very goodly, he ain't wasting no time. So what we'll do, we'll break it all down with the Unified. Since we teased it, literally, I'm guessing Marty was watching, and it was like, oh, okay, so he's talking about me. I guess we should go ahead and dial it in. So I'll go ahead and bring in Marty Jellamy, the head coach for Atlanta United Unified, to break down everything Unified. Marty, what is the word? Good morning, sir.
What is the word? The word is it's going to be hot next week. Oh, that is the word.
You ain't kidding, brother. I do want to get into anything and everything that has been going on. But since you mentioned next week, we had the folks from Genuine Cup on, and we got the explainer for the tournament and everything. How did they knock on your door and Atlanta United's door to be a part of Genuine Cup? How did this come to pass?
I actually think it was Lena, to tell you the truth. I just thank her awesome networking, and we did some work with USA Soccer down in, was it Fayetteville?
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah. Down in Fayetteville. And I think that's how they found out about us. I do think that Atlanta United is probably the premier unified team, so that kind of helps us too. So I think those combinations got us there, and as soon as we heard about it, I mean, we were on it. I was all about going, because I think it's going to be the coolest thing that we have done to date.
I mean, it is absolutely crazy when you think about it, where you have 40 clubs from around the world that are going to be a part of this thing. And when they announced the groups and everything that's going to be attached with this tournament, you're like, okay. And then your first opponent, Ajax. Okay.
Exactly. But the thing is, I don't even know my next opponent. That's the funny part. I got no idea. It's the one thing that I think is unusual about this tournament is if you win, you keep on playing winners. So like, you know, most of your brackets, you get like a group of four, and then you play the round robin and you kind of seed. From what we've been told, we will play a winner every single time. So if you win your first match, your second match and third match is against a winning team every time. But I haven't figured out how it's all going to bracket out in the end to get one winner. So, I mean, I can't wait to see how this is all going to work out. So, and our guys don't play, we play unified a lot. So the last few weeks, we've been really trying to get to a straight player-only game. Mm-hmm. So it's a big change for us. So we've been working on it hard.
There are two groups for those of these 40 clubs that are here in this massive event for inclusive soccer. So here's the group that Atlanta United's Unified is blended in with. And here are your first matchups. We can't even really say first round matchups. We can just say first matchups.
Correct.
The Chevron Phillips Chemical Group with Atlanta United Unified. Werder Bremen, Newcastle, Atlanta United, Ajax, Barca and Rangers, FC Seoul and Football Futures Foundation, Sporting out of Portugal against Inter Miami, Club America Valencia, Roma and Tigres, Racing Club and Corinthians, Manchester United and the Hungarian national team, and Club Brugge and Boca Juniors. That's just in your group.
It's crazy. And I'm like, how do they pull these teams together? I mean, we're not a national team. If you think about it, we're like small compared to these national teams. We're just not just the local MLS team, but we are the MLS team for Atlanta United. So it's going to be a big challenge. I'm really interested to see what the level, how do we stack up against these teams? Because we've never played a group like this before.
Absolutely. Vincent and Elkins group, the other 20. PSG and United Genuine, Inter Milan and the Mexico. You have the El Tri national team. Tarragona, Manchester City, No Barriers and the Guatemalan municipal team. Bayer Leverkusen, Yokohama Marinos, Fundazio and Peñarol, the Puerto Rican national team in Querétaro, Kaunas and Fadim and Benfica and the Croat national team. It is stunning to see all these names.
It's mind-boggling. When I haven't really sat down and looked at that, to tell you the truth. I looked at our group, and I've been watching the feeds coming in on Instagram of all the teams coming, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, this is like another national team. Another national team. I'm like, oh, my God, what are we doing here?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, has it – It seems like it's kind of sunk in, but at the same time, there's still this absolute wonder of where unified soccer is and where the sport actually is going and where it has come from. What is it? I mean, you've been kind of, as we walk through all of these clubs, what's it been like to see the sport get to this point?
It's, well, how about this? We did a first this year.
Yeah.
First team ever to travel internationally for MLS.
Yep. You read.
I mean, now granted, Toronto's going to be right behind us, come back and travel and see us, which will be great, but we were the first. First team to ever go internationally. That started back 2 years ago when I went to the, as coach of the All-Star. We won't talk about the score, by the way.
No.
not talk about that. But talked to the people from Montreal and Toronto, and they were like, no one's ever come to us. And I'm like, well, shoot, I'll see if Lena will do it. And sure enough, don't you know, 2 years later, here we are, the first team. And to see that growth that, you know, but they didn't do that 2 years ago. Now we've traveled internationally. Now you've got this tournament, which last year was their first year, was 8 teams. They're in the mid-40s. I mean, it's just crazy. And then you have the new group, what, the Inspire? It's an Inspire. There's another, like, national-style kind of tournament trying to take off, too. So when you think about 7 years ago, there was nothing, and now look at all these opportunities. It's just, this growth is just staggering. It's amazing.
Well, and, you know, you mentioned going over, you know, international borders and things like that. I would imagine that the logistics that go into all of this, there's an education factor that's involved. And then you come out of it with a new perspective of how things are going in Canada. What was it like for you and the club to go north of the border and experience these kinds of things and be able to share what has been going on with Atlanta United and in Major League Soccer with all these unified clubs? What has it been like to share the experience and spread it out over borders for a change?
I mean, I think it's been great. I mean, even just making all sure that all the kids have passports.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have a number of kids who've been adopted. So getting passports for adopted children, if it's the first time, is not that easy. So that alone, we had two or three people, then, you know, just the having to do all those things was a big thing. I think that Lena did a wonderful job organizing it. And there's probably half a dozen of the kids, at least, it's the first time they've traveled out of the country, let alone to Canada. Some of our partners have done a little bit of traveling, but for players, this was their first time, even though, you know, we spoke the same language in Toronto, which made it so much easier, as opposed to, like, if you went to Mexico or maybe even Montreal, let's say. Mm-hmm. If you went to go to Montreal, everyone's going to greet you in French. They're not going to greet you in English. They'll speak to you in English, but you know, you get a couple of French words and get it going. But it's been a great experience. The kids have learned a ton just being in a separate country. The one thing they didn't get a chance to do because it was such a short trip, you know, the money exchange. You and I kind of understand that, but to some of our players would have been the first time that, wait a minute, I don't have an American dollar bill. Yes. I've got a loon, right? The dollar.
You've got loonies and toonies if you're dealing with the dollar and the $2 coins.
Yep.
Toronto is one of those. How do I phrase this? It is a two money city where they'll exchange it out, but it's the idea of, you know, like if you give somebody American dollars in some businesses, they will give you back American dollars or they'll give you back Canadian in change.
Yep.
But it is another one of those things that you get to learn about when it comes to different cultures and different behavior patterns and how things and how, once again, you're in Ontario province and they're being inclusive by making sure that you're comfortable even if you have U.S. dollars and Canadian currency. So it's a learning experience, cultural and athletic too.
Yes, and the city is very diverse. I used to go to Toronto a ton, but I've definitely seen more Indians.
Yeah.
And that was a huge influence that I noticed in since I haven't been there probably in about 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a big influence that people said has changed the city tremendously. Yeah. And it's very similar to Atlanta in that way, which is great. You know, it's very diverse. There's different people from all over the world have settled in Toronto. They did get to go to medieval times, which was kind of cool. Half the kids have never done that before. Well, actually more than half, like three quarters have never been. So that was a great experience for them.
And I know that because you only have a certain amount of time, you can't do everything. I know that you would probably would have liked to have sent some of the players and some of the club up the CN Tower so they can, you know, see what's going on there. But what that does is it gives you something that you can latch onto for next time, where they can sit there and they can go up CN Tower and they can see BMO Stadium and they go, oh, that's where, you know, those kinds of shared experiences, you know, are a part of this as well.
The funny part is I don't even know if we get half the team, because half the team is definitely afraid of heights, because we talked about going there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like half of them were like, yeah, I'll go in, but I'm not going any near the glass. I did not realize that so many kids were. I'm like, I've done the Sky Needle in Seattle.
Yeah.
You know, you lean on that glass. Now they've changed it so you can lean out. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was into it, but half the kids, I bet you would have walked about 2 or 3 feet to the edge, and that would have been as far as they would have gotten.
Yeah, and they actually have at CN Tower, you can actually go outside. You can go, and I mean, they have the observation deck. You have the glass enclosed. Mm-hmm. Then you have the walk-around section that is metal enclosed. And then they have a special thing where you can actually sit there and you can put on the jumpsuit, and they'll harness you in and they'll lean you over the edge.
I'm all in. Sign me up for that.
I mean, and then there is a section in the observation deck at CN Tower that has a glass bottom. And so folks will take their picture and they'll be sitting on that glass bottom, and you can just like look straight down to.
That would have been a great thing to do. We just did not have very much time on this trip.
I know, but it gives you something to do when you go back. Marty Jelmy.
Exactly.
For Atlanta United Unified, talking about a very, very busy month for Unified with a trip to Toronto, trip coming up to Houston to play in an international tournament, the Genuine Cup. You've got All-Star. I thought it was really cool, All-Star going on this early part of the week in Austin, Texas. I thought that the reveal was very, very cool, and I'd like to remind folks to go back and watch about the reveal for All-Star and how that came to be. What was it like to see the reaction on their faces to see that they were going to Austin to be a part of All-Star?
Oh, the faces were just amazing. The funny part is Ike, if you've watched us play, he is that center mid that is so under control.
Yeah.
And he read the letter that his parents wrote, which I got to read it after, was so genuine and so heartwarming. But he was not stoic, but you could see the control, which was, you know, it's interesting how different people, and then everyone knows Alex. Alex is like, you know, the face just lit up like a balloon, like, okay, my God, I'm ready to go. Let's do this. So it's the two different people were pretty amazing to kind of watch how they both handled finding out, which was kind of cool. I just wish I was there when they were able to read them. I happened to be out of town that week, so I couldn't be there for that.
Oh. Man, I mean, when you see somebody, you know, like Ike who and Alex who have both flourished in that environment, and to see where, you know, to be a part of something, because this is not the first time that Atlanta United Unified players have been a part of All-Star, but to see Alex and Ike, and you mentioned the different personalities that are attached, where. Has anybody gotten Alex a 10-gallon hat to wear when he's on, you know, on the field there in Texas? Do we have any?
Somebody needs to do something like that. I guarantee when they see him and he comes off the plane, he's just going to be like jumping up and down, pulling his shorts up, showing his tattoo off like he always does. I mean, they're in for a treat. If nothing else, he's going to get everybody all hyped and ready to go for sure.
Well, when you have athletes be a part of an All-Star experience and then they come back and they're back a part of the team dynamic, do you notice a change? Do they carry themselves differently all over again in a different way after having that All-Star experience where they were an ambassador? They get to learn about other clubs in a singular environment, but then that added little element of, okay, you're an MLS All-Star now. Do they carry themselves differently when they come home?
The partners, I definitely think, do more so than the players.
Yeah.
The player, I think the partners understand the significance of putting that all-star jersey on. Sometimes I think the players, just because of the intellectual disability they might have, may not grasp the full, not the experience, but the weight of it, let's say.
Yeah.
Kind of like next week. I don't think, I'm for sure I know that some of the players haven't really figured out how really amazing this tournament's going to be with all these people. They know about it, but until they get there and they really see it. And I think like one of the first ones will be when you walk down to the cafeteria, because we're staying at Rice University.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure all the clubs are in one dorm. Not 100% positive, but I think. So think you're going to go down to the cafeteria to have breakfast. It's going to be the United Nations down there.
Yeah.
And I think that will be when it really hits on how amazing that next week's tournament is going to be for these guys.
Genuine Cup next week, a week from today, I think, is when action starts down at Rice University in Houston. And the championship will be played inside Rice's football, American football stadium on the 1st. And so everybody needs to keep an eye on that. Genuine WC is where they are on the 280 character app. Do you know what your travel plans are yet for heading down and travel party and all that kind of stuff?
We leave on Sunday. I think at the airport at like 4 o'clock, 7 o'clock flight. We landed 8 and then we're in. I think we have an Astros game on Monday. They give us a couple, the first 2 days, I think. Well, I think if you got, there's a team from what, South Korea coming, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
It's one of the farthest ones.
I'll dig it up real quick.
So I think the first 2 days are kind of giving people a chance to get acclimated, the time changes and things like that. So there's a lot of community events. We're going to go to the Space Center. I think we're going to do a baseball game. And then we really start on Wednesday match play.
Okay. Let's see. So FC Seoul is coming from,
there you go,
South Korea. So yeah, and they're playing Waeed Football Futures Foundation. So I mean,
every time I think about this, I've been so looking forward to it. It just blows my mind the people that are going to be there.
Yeah, and I'm trying to see. So out of Major League Soccer, it is just you and
Miami. That's it. Yep.
Werder Bremen, Newcastle, Atlanta, and these are the matchups once again. Werder Bremen, Newcastle, Atlanta United, Ajax, Barca Rangers, Seoul, Waeed Football Futures, Sporting out of Portugal, plays Inter Miami, Club America, Valencia, Roma, Tigres, Racing Club, Corinthians, Manchester United, the Hungarian national team, Club Brugge, Boca Juniors, and that's just your group. What, when you look at Genuine Cup, and when you come home, celestial champions of the whole thing. It's like worldwide champions. It's a genuine cup champ. I don't know what.
I don't know if you win. I can't even imagine. I mean, it would be just unbelievable.
Because of the success that the program has had on the field, do you sit there and have that in the back of your head, or is it just like, let's just go out and have fun and whatever happens, happens? And I mean this every season out of the blocks, because I know that there's that number that's hanging out there about being unbeaten. Is there a part of you that wants to keep that going as much as humanly possible, or do you not even get wrapped up in those kinds of things? And it's, let's just go out and play and whatever happens, happens.
You have to, kind of, because it's competitive. I don't go into the season going, I want to stay undefeated. I think I go into trying to get the best out of them. And if you get the best out of them, then I think you have a good chance of doing it.
Yeah.
And plus, a lot of what this is skill building.
Yeah.
You know, coming, doing interviews with you, traveling. So all those things make, not improve, but are experiences that these kids would never have.
Yeah.
So now they're growing. So wait a minute, now they're growing off the field. Well, if you're growing off the field, you're growing on the field too.
Yeah.
So now all of a sudden, those do start correlating together as you do more interviews and things like that, and you learn about yourself, you learn about yourself on the pitch. And then all of a sudden, they both snowball, and they all get better all the time. I mean, the biggest thing is for the growth of the player and partner to get them better as a person. But by doing that, the soccer always gets better. Would I love to win next week? Of course I would. I mean, and anybody who's going and says they don't want to, I think is a little naive. I mean, wouldn't everybody want to be able to say, hey, I won genuine cup?
I think there might be a little fibbing going on.
Yeah, then why are you in it? You play to win, but not at all costs. Come on. You know, it's competitive. We're in a competitive group, and that's the way it is. If we made it to the first knockout round, I think everybody would jump up and down for joy, and it would be awesome. So we'll see. I mean, that would be, if we could get to there, I would call that a huge success. And then anything after that would just be, you know, icing on the cake.
Yep. How many matches has it been now?
For
the unbeatenness.
Oh,
Uh-huh.
It's 3.5 seasons.
Okay, so you're talking in the neighborhood
of a dozen, probably.
Yeah, so like
somewhere in that.
Yeah, so a dozen matches of unbeatenness for Atlanta United Unified. You know, Martin,
as you see, I don't really keep track, so I couldn't even tell you what the real number is.
Well, but that's cool though that you know there are greater things in play. Yeah, the fact that the team has been unbeaten in its entirety is a cool byproduct of all of this, but it is the learning and the experience and integration and the unification of all of these different individuals, all these different cultures that come together and all this kind of stuff. But I mean, it's there, but it is so far in the background when it comes to the day to day. It's a cool byproduct of all of this. Mm-hmm. You and I could probably talk forever about this kind of stuff.
I'm sure I could.
but I wanted to before you guys left for Houston, I wanted to have you on to talk about Unified and where things are in a very, very busy month. When you come back from Genuine, obviously, you know, you're going to come back. You're going to talk about the experience. But, you know, early August, we'll have you come back. We'll have you do another morning. We'll talk about Genuine. We'll talk about the season. And then when Toronto comes to town, all those kinds of things. Obviously, when we'll let everybody know how to watch and everything like that. I can't thank you enough for doing this. It's been great to catch up with you, and it's great to see how things are with Atlanta United's Unified team as you guys are in a very, very busy month with All-Star going on right now, Genuine Cup happening next week, and a trip to Toronto already in the books. Marty, as always, it's great to see you, my friend, and just be safe and go have fun, and we'll catch up with you after Genuine Cup is over. Promise?
I promise. I think if you go have fun and not get the pressure, that's going to take you farther, so that's the goal.
Absolutely cool. Thanks again, Marty. We'll catch up soon.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Cannot wait to see what happens with Atlanta United Unified as they try to chase after basically a world title at the Genuine Cup in Houston this upcoming week. That has been the best of SDHAM. Thanks, as always, to all of you for hanging out with us here on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app, and also for being a part of our growth at the SDH Network. Could not have done any of this without you. And we are thankful for all of you each and every day as we take you through what's going on in the world of soccer. So for Jason, for Nick, for Jarrett, for Maddie, for Sophia, for Caroline, I'm just John. John Nelson, thanks for hanging out with us here on the best of SDHAM. We will see you at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. We will see you for Leagues Cup. We'll get you ready for Summer Series and everything else that's coming down the pipeline when it comes to soccer here in the United States. Play it safe, everybody. Mucha plata, y'all. We'll catch up with you next week.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It's a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and more importantly, on your life. Listen and follow Jill on Money on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.